Well, welcome back to Archaeology News Weekly. I am, of course, your host, David Connolly. This news is brought to you, of course, in partnership between Stone Pages and the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources website. All the stories have been collected from various sources, and to view these details on each story, including that vital source, please see the Stone Pages website at news.stonepages.com. Now, remember, you could all be listening to this on Stone Pages Archaeo News app, as well as keeping up with the news as it happens. But don't forget that it's nearly time for the 200th podcast. Yes, this is podcast 199. Yes, really. It's the equivalent of listening to me talking for over 4.5 days. Frightening. So, I tell you what, for a special one, why don't you send in your requests and dedications into info@bajr.org. That was info@bajr.org, marked podcast. And I'll read out all your messages from around the world. Well, I hope. Please do send them in. Plus, I might even put in the odd blooper as well on a prize giveaway. And so much more from all of us here at Archaeo News. Thanks so much for helping us keep going over the past 6 years, starting, yes, believe it or not, way back in July 2005. Well, from Diego, Debbie, Dave, and myself, of course, a very warm welcome to podcast 199. So, let's get to it. Let's have a look at the headlines for this week. Well, we have mysterious Middle Eastern geoglyphs, numbering in their thousands, or are they? We report on some interesting work at Bluestone Henge as well by my good friend Henry and Adam Stanford. Well, we've got 6,000-year-old Romeo and Juliet, a touching story from Italy, and then a report about rare artifacts documenting, Colorado's prehistory. We report again on the prehistoric clay discs that have been found in Alaska, and also archaeologists unearthing significant finds in Colorado. A believe it or not story is prehistoric skirt discovered in Armenian cave, and then down beneath the waves we go to ancient stone anchors which may rewrite the history of the Black Sea sailing. We have 8,500-year-old remains unearthed in a Turkish city of Izmir, and human ancestors interbreeding with related species protects us from diseases. There's a big dig at Native American mound builder site, and another big dig where we have been finding early links between the Picts, these mysterious people, or are they, and the Romans in Scotland. We finish off with the first advanced stone tool, and now look at us, able to have podcasts and Kindles and all sorts of stuff like that. So, without further ado, let's start off with today's podcast. Well, mysterious Middle Eastern geoglyphs stretching from Syria to Saudi Arabia can be seen from the air but not the ground and are virtually unknown to the public. Referred to by archaeologists as wheels, these stone structures have a wide variety of designs, a common one being a circle with spokes radiating inside. Researchers believe that they date back at least 2,000 years. They're often found on lava fields and range from 25 to 70 metres across. New research by David Kennedy, hello David, Professor of Classics and Ancient History at University of Western Australia, reveals that these wheels form part of a variety of the stone landscape, including kites, which are used for funnelling herds of animals, pendants, lines of stone cairns that run from burials, and walls that meander across the landscape for up to 100 metres or more. Some of the wheels are found in isolation, where others are clustered together. At one location near the Azarak Oasis in Jordan, hundreds can be found clustered into dozens of groups. Kennedy became fascinated by these structures when, as a student, he read accounts of Royal Air Force pilots flying over them in the 1920s on airmail routes across Jordan. In Saudi Arabia, Kennedy's team have found quite different wheel styles. Some are rectangular, others are circular, but contain two spokes, forming a bar often aligned in the direction that the sun rises and sets. The wheels in Jordan and Syria, on the other hand, have numerous spokes and do not seem to be aligned with any astronomical phenomena. Cairns are often associated with the wheels. Sometimes they circle the perimeter of the wheel, other times they are among the spokes themselves. Researchers have noted that the wheels are often found on top of kites, which date back as far as 9,000 years ago, but never the other way around. Well, fortunately, in this report, you will hear no traces of Nazca lines and massive geoglyphs. We have to remember that these are functional objects for the people of the Black Desert. I've had the joy of actually seeing them from the air and from the ground. So, with not a trace of a Nazca, let's move on to the next story. Now, with no trace of Nazca, but a slight trace of Stonehenge, we move down to Blue Stonehenge. A new digital reconstruction of the monument discovered by the Stonehenge Riverside Project back in 2009 suggests that the ring of stone sockets found at the southern end of the avenue may well be oval in shape, just like the blue stone oval at the centre of Stonehenge. The stones have been removed thousands of years ago, but the sizes and stone fragments from the holes in which they stood indicate that this was a circle of bluestone all the way from the Pretheli Mountains of Wales, 240 kilometres away. Excavations in 2009 by the Stonehenge Riverside Project uncovered 9 stone holes, part of a ring of probably 25. The monument was 10 metres across and surrounded by a henge, which is a ditch with an external bank. These standing stones mark the end of the avenue that leads from the River Avon to Stonehenge. Told you there was a trace of Stonehenge here. A 2,800-metre processional route constructed at the end of the Neolithic period. The outer henge around the stones was built around 2,400 BCE, but arrowheads found in the stone circle itself indicate the stones were erected as much as 500 years earlier. When the stones were removed by Neolithic people, it's possible that they were incorporated within Stonehenge during its major rebuilding, around about 2,500 BCE. After this date, Stonehenge consists of about 80 Welsh bluestone and 83 local sarsen stones. We'd be glad to know there's more coming on this on Past Horizons, direct from the pen of Henry Rothwell. Now, to Italy. Way back in 2007, a team of archaeologists led by Elena Maria Menotti were excavating in a village called Valdaro in northern Italy when they discovered the skeletons of two intertwined bodies. The burial dates from the Neolithic period between 5,000 to 4,000 BCE. Double burials are rare in Neolithic times, but the positioning of this couple was unique as they were facing each other with arms and legs intertwined. The excavation of a skeleton would normally involve the documentation and the removal of the bones one at a time, but in this case, that would have destroyed their unique position. So the team decided to lift the block of soil surrounding the bones out of the ground intact. Analysis of the remains revealed that they belonged to a male and a female, aged between 18 to 20 years old, and they rapidly became known as the Lovers of Valdaro. Whilst the theory that the lovers had been killed became popular, Mantua, along with Verona, is a city associated with Shakespeare's ill-fated Romeo and Juliet, there's unfortunately no evidence. Why am I saying unfortunately? Shocking. There is no evidence of a violent death. DNA testing, 3D laser scanning and X-ray scanning are ongoing at the Musée Civique in Como, and it's hoped to have more information soon. The remains were on public view for the first time a few days ago, and because of the association with Romeo and Juliet, and even Verdi's opera Rigoletto, also set locally and telling of the story of lovers and death, the Lovers of Valdaro have become very popular. An association called the Lovers in Mantua is looking to raise enough funds to house them permanently. Professor Silvia Bagnoli, the president of the association itself, has said that around €500,000 would be needed to provide a permanent exhibition and a multimedia space for the lovers. There's only one thing to say about that. I love that. In 2008, a landowner in Boulder, Colorado, called Patrick Mahaffey, hired a contractor to landscape part of his land and dig a pond. The contractor suddenly stopped digging when he heard an unexpected noise. He had uncovered a hoard of Stone Age tools, which later became known as the Mahaffey Cache. 83 Stone Age tools were found in total, dating back to the Pleistocene era, approximately 11,000 BCE, when the Clovis people were inhabiting the area. The tools were made of a local Colorado material known as Kremlin chert, and had been carefully made to fit comfortably into the palm of the hand, and so were therefore believed to be for butchering rather than for hunting. analysis was carried out by the Laboratory of Archaeological Science at California State University on the protein residues that were found on the tools. This analysis confirmed that they actually had been used to butcher a range of prehistoric mammals, or megafauna, which were prevalent in North America at the time. The Clovis people were once thought to have been the first people to populate North America, but it is now believed that a different pre-Clovis people had arrived prior to them. I like the way I have to do that. You have to sort of put on that special voice of pre-Clovis people. The Clovis hunters had left evidence from southern Canada through to the northern Mexico. And in fact, the name Clovis is taken from the site in New Mexico where they were first found. What a fabulous discovery. So glad that he stopped and so glad that they got that recorded. Thanks very much to the contractor and to Patrick. Now, up to the cold part of America. Four decorated clay discs have been discovered at a site in Alaska, apparently the first artifacts of their type discovered in that state. The discs were found during a summer expedition in Noatak National Preserve, at a site where archaeologists have for decades been studying lakefront pit dwellings that date back some 1,000 years. The discs are etched and two of them have holes in the centre. They were discovered when a team from the University of Alaska Museum at Fairbanks and the National Park Service travelled to the site in northwestern Alaska to record previously known prehistoric petroglyphs that are found on boulders. Such prehistoric rock art is extremely rare in the interior and northern Alaska, though of course common in southwestern parts of United States and other regions. The age of the discs has yet to be determined, and the site is located about 160 kilometres northeast of the Inupiat Eskimo community of Kotzebue. Despite its harsh climate, the area has been inhabited for over 11,000 years. I am, I have to say, looking forward to hearing more about them. The Gunnison Gorge National Conservation Area in Colorado contains a number of prehistoric sites that have excited Bureau of Land Management archaeologists Glade Haddon and Carol Patterson. One of those, the Gunnison Rock Art site, is tucked into a rocky ledge overlooking the Gunnison River. The overhang downstream from the Gunnison River Pleasure Park is covered with archaic rock art. This is where ancient people went to hunt, Haddon says, because it's the only place that the herds of deer can actually cross the river for miles in either direction. Bureau archaeologists have been aware of the site for some time, but feared looters had beaten them to most of the interesting finds. But when professors from Western Wyoming College visited the area looking for a place to host a field school for their students, Bureau of Land Management archaeologists decided to start excavating beneath the overhang. Soon they discovered what Haddon described as possibly one of the most important archaeological sites in western Colorado. The first find was a 4,000-year-old rock-lined hearth. So they kept on digging and found a 6,000-year-old hearth. Beneath that, guess what? A 7,000-year-old hearth. On they went and found signs of human occupation from over 8,000 years ago. Among some of the finds are Fremont-style basketry, projectile points, beads and bones, which also served as tools. The Fremont were an agricultural people who lived in the area from 300 to 1300 CE. Haddon says the team have uncovered what appears to be two distinct Fremont age levels. He's hopeful evidence of even older occupation may be deeper within the stratified layers. While Haddon is aware of similar sites in the area, he believes the Gunnison Rock River Rock Art site is unique in terms of the information that has so far been revealed. Now, fancy making an entrance to a party that will get you noticed? Well, archaeologists studying at the Areni 1 cave in Armenia's Vyotdzor region announced that they'd found part of a woman's multicoloured straw dress that they believe was made around 5,900 years ago. Armenian Archaeology and Ethnography Institute director Pavel Avestian explained that this artefact was discovered in 2010. It's only now that the discovery is now gaining wider knowledge. The woman's clothing dates back to around 3,900 BCE. So far, the team have discovered the skirt's constituent parts, which were superbly preserved with repeating colour patterns, and remnants of straw-woven material were also recovered. According to Archaeology and Ethnography Institute director, the artefact is currently under their care, but will soon be sent to the restorer who, until the arrival of French specialists, will work on its conservation. Pavel added that after the final conservation process, the skirt will be exhibited in the History Museum of Armenia. Areni-1 is the same cave complex in southern Armenia where previous discoveries have included what are believed to be the world's oldest leather shoe and the world's oldest winery. So what's next? The world's oldest joke? No, I'm afraid I've got that one here. Now, Black Sea. Massive ancient stone anchors were found by divers participating in an archaeological expedition near the southern Bulgarian Black Sea town of Sozopol. The expedition, led by Deputy Director of Bulgaria's National Historical Museum, Dr. Ivan Hristov, found the artifacts west of the Juliet Islands. The 200-kilogram anchors have two holes in them, one for the anchor rope itself and the other from a wooden stick, which would act as a drag on the seabed. They were used for 150 to 200 ton ships that transported mainly wheat, but also dried and salted fish, skins and timber, even metals from what is now Bulgaria's coast. The anchor shape suggests they were used by Cretomycenaean, Phoenician or even Carian sailors in the 15th and 12th centuries BCE, which would contradict the belief that the Greeks were the first Black Sea sailors in the 12th century BCE. The anchors are also said to show that the Trojan War may have started because of an excise duty imposed by the Trojans, who took advantage of the control of the Dardanelles. Oh, dear, 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 you're doing so well, and then you just went off into wild conjecture. But then what's wrong with a bit of wild conjecture? Oh, everything, actually. Anyway, to Turkey now. Turkish researchers conducting excavations at Yeslova Hoyugu, the oldest known site of human settlement in Izmir, have announced the discovery of fingerprints more than 8 millennia old, belonging to residents of the area during the Neolithic period. These fingerprints are thought to belong to children and women and were discovered on clay pots. The dig leader also said his team has discovered other tools belonging to the Neolithic, as well as artifacts that may have been used for ceremonies. According to Derin, that's the leader, the bull figures that the ancient people drew on their artifacts symbolised perhaps a cult figure. At the same time, the bull also symbolised fertility, adding that the society that lived during the Neolithic age did not use this figure everywhere, but only in specific places. Noting that the team still was unsure as to how people used to live during the Neolithic age in Yeslova, Derin commented that people had turned from some of their rooms, had turned some of their rooms in their homes into places of worship. This, I have to say, sounds very similar to other locations in Turkey, like Çatalhöyük, where the ritual spaces and the actual living spaces merged together with a very blurry distinction. Now, wonder why you're not coughing? Well, analysis suggests genetic mixing occurred in Africa around 35,000 years ago, according to a study published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. Up to 2% of the genomes of some modern African populations may originally come from closely related species. Paleontologists have long wondered whether modern humans came from a single isolated population or a mix of various species. Last year, an analysis comparing the Neanderthal genome sequence to that of modern Homo sapiens showed that some interbreeding did take place between the two species in Europe sometime between 80 to 30,000 years ago. It has been a mystery whether similar mixing took place among Homo species even earlier, before the populations that became modern humans even left Africa. To find out, evolutionary biologist Michael Hammer at the University of Arizona in Tucson and his colleagues studied DNA from two African hunter-gatherer groups, the Bayaka Pygmies and the San Bushmen, as well as from the West African agricultural population known as the Mandinka. Each of these groups is descending from populations that are thought to have remained in Africa, meaning that they would have avoided the genetic bottleneck effect that usually occurs with migration. This means the groups show particularly high genetic diversity, which makes their genomes more likely to have retained evidence of ancient genetic mixing. Because direct comparison to archaic specimens wasn't possible, the authors used computer models to simulate how infiltration from different populations might have affected patterns of variation within modern genomes. In chromosomes 4, 13 and 18, the researchers found genetic regions that were more divergent on average than known modern sequences at the same locations, hinting at a different origin. Hammer and his colleagues say these sequences must have come from a now extinct member of the Homo genus that broke away from the modern human lineage around 700,000 years ago. Hammer goes on to say this disproves the conventional view that we are descended from a single population that arose in Africa and replaced all other Homo species without interbreeding. We are going to need to modify the standard model of human origins. Now, the Mississippians, whose pottery and building styles identify them as a single cultural group, lived in or near the, surprise, surprise, Mississippi Valley in the USA more than 1,000 years ago. They built complex cities, enormous earthen mounds, and then disappeared, all in the space of 200 to 300 years. But the stockyard site, known as the East St. Louis site, was abandoned after only 150 years. It lies 8 kilometres west of the region's main group of mounds, known as the Cahokia Mounds, which were occupied for another 150 years. Less than 1% of the Cahokia Mounds site has been excavated, but the village site will now be fully excavated. The opportunity to completely investigate a major site this large is almost unheard of. When finished with this project, more of the East St. Louis Mound Group and the associated complex will have been excavated than all of Cahokia. For archaeologists, this location is also significant as it would have been the first sign of major habitation seen by people as they navigated a much wider and shallower Mississippi in their dugout canoes. The village would have been in the path of native people heading towards the Cahokia Mounds ritual center, 8 kilometers further inland. Artifacts usually found in other states, including pieces of finely decorated pottery from Arkansas, Missouri, and Iowa, and beads carved from shells from the Gulf of Mexico, are being found almost daily. These discoveries support a long-held theory that the entire Cahokia area was the center of a culture that built mounds throughout the Midwest and southeastern United States. A 15-centimeter-high stone statue of a kneeling woman holding a conch shell was found last year. It's believed to be one of only a few that are known to exist. Dursch said that the sheer amount of data being collected all from one place is likely to lead to answers to some of the basic questions about the Mississippian people. Now, a team of archaeologists known as the Strathairn Environs and Royal Forteviot, or SERF project, have uncovered findings that could rewrite early Scottish history. The team comprises archaeologists and students from Glasgow, Aberdeen and Chester's University, as well as other volunteers from Scotland, Europe and North America. The site, well, it's located at a place called Dunning in Perthshire. The massively fortified dwelling, the preferred residence of the elite during Roman times, is the first of its kind to be discovered in the lowlands of Scotland for around 100 years. Situated at the top of a hill to offer occupants 360-degree views of the surrounding countryside, the Brochs dry stone walls stand in excess of 2 metres high and 5 metres thick. You have to think of a Broch as like a sort of a huge sort of tower-like structure with a sort of single door into it. It looks a little bit like sort of a one of these power station chimneys, a huge power station chimney. Fascinating things. The SERF team have uncovered evidence that after the Broch was destroyed by fire, the Picts built a palisaded fortress directly on top of it, which was then likely occupied by a Pictish warlord. It's not unreasonable to see this as the seat of a Celtic chieftain who collected a wide range of luxury objects from the Roman world, perhaps through trading with the Romans or even serving in the Roman army. This is Stephen Driscoll, Professor of Historical Archaeology at Glasgow University and also the director of the SERF project. The artifacts are of particular interest as they date to the time of the first contact with the Roman world and offer numerous clues on how the Picts might have begun their interactions with the Roman Empire. This is the best example of an Iron Age Roman site being reoccupied by this elusive bunch of the Picts. We have long suspected that this happened, but now we can examine the Picts' relationships with the Romans in much greater detail. I have to throw this one in because it was ever so exciting for me. I actually managed to go down into a sort of a post-Roman cellar called a souterrain in Midlothian. And absolutely fabulous. It's almost completely made out of reused Roman masonry. And one of the lintels has the Pegasus symbol carved onto it, picked into it. And in fact, that is the symbol of the Second Legion Augusta. So somewhere close by is a mighty and rather nice Roman structure. That's the next thing I've got to try and find. Now, our final story. Whilst the first stone tools to have been found so far are recorded to have been the Aldewan tools, named after the gorge in Tanzania, where they were first found, dating from approximately 2.6 million years ago, they were very crude and were used simply for hacking and crushing. Until recently, it was believed that the oldest advanced stone tools were from Ethiopia and dating from approximately 1.4 million years ago. These tools were far more sophisticated and were chipped into shape to allow more delicate cutting and scraping techniques, as well as the previous crushing attributes. But now the boundary has been pushed back to approximately 1.76 million years ago by a find on the shores of Lake Turkana in Kenya. These finds belong to a group known as the Acheulean tools, named after a high-profile site in France. This is where the story gets both interesting and, I'm afraid, confusing. So, listen carefully. Acheulean tools are being generally found on sites also containing the fossilized bones of Homo erectus, and it was believed that they were developed from the cruder Aldewan tools as Homo erectus advanced and became more skillful at tool-making. However, on a contemporary site dating to 1.8 million years ago in Georgia, only Aldewan tools were found alongside Homo erectus remains. This could have two possible meanings. The first is that Homo erectus, or predecessor, migrated from Africa to Asia earlier and either never developed the advanced skills or individuals who had the skills died out before passing them on. The second theory is more radical and proposes that Homo erectus began in Asia and migrated to Africa. Both these suppositions need more evidence before either one of them can be confirmed. Anyway, don't forget, email me at info@bajr.org. That was info@bajr.org with your comments, your dedications, your suggestions, and any stories, any even amusing stories related to this podcast over the last 6 years. This will be going into our special extended podcast 200. Don't forget again, of course, that you can find many new archaeological and heritage employment opportunities in the UK on www.bajr.org, and more can always be found at Stonepages, news.stonepages.com. Don't forget also Past Horizons, which just seems to get better and better, www.pasthorizons.com. Thanks for listening to Archaeology News Weekly. I cannot wait for next week.